Hey, everybody. You're listening to Into the Dark here on Radio Free Brooklyn. If you want to contribute to this network and the things that it does, you should go to radiofreebrooklyn.com/pledge. So stick around. We're going to have a witchy show for you with all sorts of witchy things to talk about here on Into the Dark.
Skeptic among believers and the believer among skeptics.
Are you a good witch or a bad witch?
Who are the witches?
Magic, necromancy, and witchcraft.
Wake up! They're all about you! All around you!
They're not always evil.
The often erotic world of the witch.
The journalist with an inside knowledge of witchcraft.
It's a sex thing, deep down.
It is a sex thing deep down, of course, because, I mean, that is sort of the joy of magic, is that it can be anything you want it to be, especially if that thing that you want it to be is sex. So, hey, welcome to Into the Dark. Got a great show for you today. So we're going to be talking to Laysa Cantoral. And if you don't know Laysa Cantoral, you should, because she's a great witchy person and also just a great figure on the various lit scenes that are available to you if you go to your Google search bar. But before we get that conversation going, which I'm really hoping is going to happen, I just want to like do a brief shout out to our episode in 2 weeks from now, because I just did an interview yesterday with someone who has been studying deeply into the occult practices of Thailand, and we got into a good talk about that. So that's going to come up in 2 weeks, so do tune in then, because that show is going to be off the hook. I'm talking about stolen baby meat, all sorts of crazy things. It's going to be solid and tasty and good. But before we get to that, let's talk to Laysa. So I'm going to try to Skype her in, which is another example of me trying to use technology to do this show in ways that may or may not be successful. So let's see if this works here on Into the Dark. It rings. Do you hear it ringing?
Yo.
Hey. Okay, cool. You're on. And wait, say something so I can check the levels and make sure you're actually being heard by everybody else.
Doobie doobie doo.
Okay. Maybe get louder and more. Be shouty at your computer.
Hey.
Oh, that was perfect. Okay, cool. Also, that hey was very Brody Daly, and that's that gives you like 20 points in my book. Okay, so now we're going to introduce you. So, Laysa Cantoral, am I saying those right?
Because
we've never actually met in person, though we've had Facebook exchanges because the internet is great. So Laysa Cantoral is an editor at Clash Media, which you should check it out, yesclash.com. She's also an editor at the New English Press and a penniless at Dynatics Ministries. And I had to look that up, and I believe that's a Malaysian word for writer, yeah?
I guess. I don't even know what that is.
What do you do for them?
I mean, those are old things, so I don't.
Okay. Sorry. I was sneaking around your Facebook page.
I mean, basically, I write stuff for Luna Magazine. And I'm the editor and publisher, co-publisher of Clash Books.
Right. And you also do a podcast, Get Lit with Laysa, right?
Yep, Get Lit with Laysa. It's on Podbean. And I try to have, like, it doesn't make any sense, but this hand puppet that insults people, her name is Ophelia Pigley, and she's, like, this really, like, ADD nihilistic pig that just hates everybody.
Oh, so like me, basically.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know yet. Let's see how you measure up to her.
Okay, cool. I hope to be there. Most of my inspirations in my life have been pigs of various forms. Okay, cool. But, you know, that stuff is interesting and it's good, and we should talk about it and promote it because people should know about that. But I'm more interested in your magical background. So let's get talking for a minute. So where did the magic start? Because, I mean, I know you're into chaos magic and you're into sex magic and lucid dreaming and altered states. Where did this all begin?
I I didn't really start to get into spiritual things until maybe I was like 23. I was in college and I was smoking a lot of weed. And I was like, I actually got on academic probation for a semester because I couldn't be bothered to go to class. I failed yoga because I couldn't be bothered to go to fucking a one credit yoga class.
That's actually pretty awesome. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm sure that was very stressful, but that's pretty great.
And I kept hearing this voice in my head when I was high. I would ask myself this question. I would ask, why can't I be like this when I'm sober? Like, why can't I feel this connected? And there would be this voice that would tell me, you already know, like you don't need this, basically. You don't need to smoke pot to feel a connection to yourself and the world that you're in. But since I was high, I didn't remember when I would get sober. Eventually I did. And I started to really think. I started to look at tarot cards. I took this Afro-Cuban dance class at school that really helped me get connected. We learned the Yoruba dances to call down the Orishas, which is their gods. So you do basically there's a dance for each one. And I really connected to the one for Yemaya, who's basically their Aphrodite. It's the sea goddess. And so I started to kind of open up that part of myself and start to I connected through spirituality at first through connecting through goddess energies.
Okay, that's really cool. So do you still use dance in a ritualistic or spiritual way?
I definitely do, but I don't as much as I should. I probably use witchcraft the way reluctant Catholics use Catholicism, to be honest. Kind of go to church sometimes. Because you feel guilty. I do it when my life like goes to shit or if my brain is really out of whack, then I'll be like, okay, I got to get myself realigned. Or if there's something that I really need, I'll focus my energy. I'm really bad at maintaining a ritual practice. Like I keep saying, I need to do yoga every day. I need to dance every day. I need to meditate. Like all that stuff is stuff that centers me.
Yeah.
And it's stuff that I need to remind myself to do because unless I'm in physical or psychic pain, I won't do it, which really sucks. But I mean, it's more how I see the world, I think, is how it shaped me.
Okay. And do you find that like when you, because it sounds like you're kind of doing this like sporadically when you need to, but do you find that like when you get back into it, when there's a time that you actually need to get back into it, that it's sort of like an easy transition back into that way of thinking and that way of seeing the world?
I'm always seeing and thinking that way.
Oh, okay.
The doing things as far as rituals and yoga and all that and mindful dancing, it just takes you to a higher level of experience. Once you start feeling connected to yourself, you start to feel connected to the world and everything starts flowing. but how I see the world was a permanent shift that came as a result of the dancing and also some acid experiences and just certain visions I had that kind of like just crack things open for me, and that never gets shut off again.
Okay, can you talk about those visions that you had that had this sort of like really formative?
Yeah, one I actually wrote about in my gonna pimp myself here. In my collection, Cartoons in the Suicide Forest, which you can get on Amazon because I have an Amazon page because I'm a real author.
That sounds totally real. That's much realer than I am. So well done. Good, good.
As soon as I got the Amazon page, I was like, oh, wow, I'm like a real person now. I exist on the internet. So I have a piece in there. Most of it is fiction, but there's a couple that are nonfiction. And one is called Cosmic Bruja, which I initially wrote for the Ladybox blog. But it's about this my first acid trip, and this as well as this crazy dream I had at some point during the year after I had that acid trip, because I think that trip, it rewired my brain, and I just started having much more vivid and intense dreams after that. And the dream that I had was I encountered the sort of Bruja figure.
Okay.
I don't know if you ever had dreams where somebody is looking at you, like really looking at you in a dream, and they're like really making eye contact, and you just feel like, this isn't inside my head. Like, this is somebody real.
Yeah, I had a dream like that like maybe 2 years ago, and I didn't know what to do with it, really. But this sounds like that, like, you had this very intense experience, and it gave you a sense of, like, direction to some extent.
Well, what was weird is it was, like, sort of like a little bit of it was like a classroom almost, like a mystic sort of classroom.
Okay.
So I see this woman. She's, like, an old crone type. She's in these blue robes. And she looks me in the eye and she's like, do you want to learn to fly? And I'm like, yeah. And, so she's like, okay, let's do this. And the way we did it, that she hooked her arms under my arms so that I could be, face down, and she was above me and she was the one flying, sort of carrying me.
Okay.
So I could just feel like I was flying, but be looking. And I have flown before in dreams, but this was, much higher, So I was seeing all this landscape beneath me, beautiful vistas, mountains, rolling hills, trees, all this stuff. And there's something that always happens to me during flying and lucid dreams is I'll get super excited and then I'll get really scared. And then my dream will just either disappear, or it'll shift into a nightmare, or it'll just stop and turn into another dream. And so that started to happen. I started to get scared, and she just laughed at me like this, this crazy, like cackling, like crone bitch laugh.
Yeah.
And scared the goddamn shit out of me. I was already scared. and she's like, focus. You just need to focus. And so I powered through and I focused, and then I regained my vision. And it was literally the first time ever in a lucid dream where I was able to pull myself back from that fear. And it was like a mind lesson. And it's something that I've tried to decipher throughout the years of, like, what does it mean?
Yeah.
It might be connected to my bipolar. I think it has to do with a lot of different things, but it's just something that I do where if I feel like I'm like scared of success, I don't know, something where I'm very self-sabotaging. Mm. So that's something that I struggle with on a daily basis and I'm still trying to power through. But that was a moment of like getting a direct sort of mind lesson of like, this is how you can rein yourself in.
Did you ever see that woman again or encounter that figure in another situation?
No.
Hmm. Okay. But this still opened up a door for you into another way of sort of approaching things.
Yeah. I mean, I realized I had more control than I thought.
Okay. That's great. So this is like super empowering. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay. So you have this experience, and then how did you find your way to things like chaos magic and sex magic? Like, how did that jump in?
I think it's a chaos magic. It's kind of a mix of a lot of things. I was raised, my dad was a physics teacher at a university. So he talked to me about physics when I was a little girl. He like told me about neutrinos and the Big Bang and like how things work. So I kind of always had that in my mind. And then in high school, I was like reading the Satanic Bible and stuff, and really liked existentialism, reading Camus. And then in college, tarot and these mystic dances. And I think, and I tried reading a lot of like pagan, Wiccan and pagan books, yeah. magic books, because I started to feel this is what is speaking to me. And they were all just like really annoying. Like,
sorry, please keep going. I'm sorry to interrupt. Please continue.
They were all like these, just like all these, like, remember all these dates and these elaborate rituals. And I just have never, I just can't buy religion in any package. I don't like anybody telling me what to do.
Yeah.
And so I think that's why by default, I'd say if someone asked me what I believe in or practice, I'd say chaos magic, because that is kind of DIY magic, where right. you take what means something to you and you use it. And also it's very scientific because it's very trial and error. Mm. You try things. If it works for you, you know it works and you do it again. If it doesn't work, you're like, well, that didn't work, you know? So it's just very, it's pragmatic magic, really. And it's about sort of understanding chaos theory and the butterfly effect and, like, you know, so it's kind of like The Secret, but The Secret kind of like really oversimplifies it.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, if you have this intent, you will definitely get it. Like, you just, it's so simple. You just want it and you get it. Like, it's, you might get something, but you won't get it the way you want it. You'll get it 10 years later when you don't want it anymore. You'll get it in a way you don't want it. Like, you know, you don't know how you're going to, how your desires and your will manifest.
Yeah.
But they will.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, if you approach it a little too cavalierly, it can be very monkey's paw, sort of. That old, is that a Kipling story? I feel like that's a dead reference. But yeah, you'll get what you want, but not in the way you want it. Okay. Yeah.
That happens to me a lot. Like, I mean, you know, there's things I've gotten recently and it's like, great. I don't even want this anymore.
Okay, so like that's still happening to you then. Mm-hmm. Like you're still like getting, it's weird because like I've never like really seen a chaos magician who had it completely down, you know? Like I've never seen anybody.
I don't think there's a way because there's too much chaos factor. Well, the thing is, people think chaos means chaos. Chaos does not mean chaos. Chaos just means, you know, everything is interconnected. You know, one person can know. We have subjective perception. We don't have objective perception. Yeah. Our brain is not capable of knowing. So things are going to happen. The you know, to use a, I think it's a political term, unintended consequences. Mm. You know, that happens for everything. There's unintended consequences for everything. So you better be sure you want something because you will get it. And there will be sacrifices, you know, sometimes other people have to suffer for you to get what you want sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, that's sorry. Keep going. Mm. Oh, I mean, it's always like, I find it helpful and feel free to push back against this if you want to, that to think of it in terms of just like, there are a number of potential outcomes to any situation. And what you're trying to do is just nudge one of those so it's sort of more likely than it would have been otherwise to happen. But of course, all those things are things that could have happened anyway. So like you need to sort of understand how you're like, if you're trying to do chaos magic, you need to understand how you're going to affect the world in what will seem like a very concrete and predictable way. Like you won't get something out of nothing. So like it is good to think about how could this thing that I want to come about and what would be the consequences of the various routes by which that would actually happen.
Mm-hmm. And I think patience is a big thing with magic, as well as working in publishing, being a writer, you know, all that. People want things, they want it right away. And that's just not how this stuff works. You know, you get little things and you inch your way and you slowly build towards something.
Yeah. When you do chaos magic, like what kind of like, because like, you know, part of the point of the show is to give people who are interested in these, like how to do these sorts of things, a sense of like how other people are doing them. So like when you do chaos magic, like are you doing rituals? Are you doing sort of like sigil magic? Are you doing...
I haven't done any sigil magic. Sometimes I just borrow rituals. Sometimes I ask somebody like, hey, do you know a good ritual to do this? Like all that like voodoo doll stuff, like that really works. It works. It's very direct. There's somebody you want to affect, like you can do it like that really easily. But I haven't done any negative magic in a long time. Usually, I mean, there's one way to make things happen that is super easy and ties in with the sex magic, which is basically you just masturbate or have sex. And as you're doing it, you're picturing what you want, and you have to really, really focus your emotion. And then at the moment of orgasm or release, you just like really crescendo your emotion and your visualization of it.
Yeah.
And then you just let it go and try not to think about it afterwards.
Hmm.
It's a shortcut to raising your energy.
Yeah. That's okay. So that's actually something I'd like to ask you about, if I may, which is that a lot of people, like, there's a question of like, what do you do with the magic after you sort of done the thing, right? Because a lot of people, like for example, just to go back to sigil magic, just because like it's a thing I hear about a lot, so it feels like an obvious example, but like a lot of people, like, they'll do something with a sigil, like they'll maybe like masturbate like with looking at the sigil, or like masturbate so that they like somehow come onto the sigil, and then they'll get rid of whatever they were using as a sigil. Like they'll get rid of the sheet of paper, they'll burn it, they'll bury it or something like that. And like when people are doing hexes, they might like hold on to the hex jar they've made for a long time, but then get rid of it once either the hex has been affected or they feel like they can let the whole thing go. So when you say like, don't think about it after you've done, after you've had the release and the emotional crescendo, like, is that like, what is that doing? Cause I'm not entirely sure why people sort of do this. And I mean, I'm curious, like, what's your reason for doing it? Oh no, you've frozen. Oh, you're back. Okay, cool. Where are you?
Partly. Am I back?
I mean, the visual is frozen, but I can hear you. So I'd say keep going, okay, and maybe the visual will catch up.
Okay. Yeah, you don't need the visual.
I mean, it's nice, but like, actually, it's fun because it's frozen between two images. So like, it looks like your eyes are closed and open at the same time, like those paintings of Jesus people will have sometimes.
That sounds trippy. Well, that's how I actually am. It didn't freeze. That's actually how I look right now.
That's fantastic. This gets witchier by the minute. I love it.
I say that because that's what I've heard you should do, that you really shouldn't think about it. Because you already released it. So if you think about it, it's like you're holding on to it and you haven't released it.
Okay.
I do think about it, but you try not to. You can't get it all the way out of your mind, but you really try to not put that energy back, because then it's like you're holding it still and you're not letting it fly out. It's like a bird that you let out, to do its work.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. When you're typically doing something like this, you're back. I mean, the visual's back. I mean, you were always here in the audio form. Your voice was always present. When you are sort of like, do you sort of do a, I'm trying to think of how to phrase this so it makes sense. When you're trying to achieve something through a magical act, is it sort of like one and done? Like you do it the one time and sort of let it go? Or do you like, will you like do like a week or like 2 weeks or something of just like really working on it over and over and over again? Like, does that dilute things at all, do you think?
I've never thought of doing that. You just do it.
Okay, cool.
I really think it's about intensity of emotion, because the times that I've seen my desires manifest, even when I wasn't doing a spell, that's the scary thing, is I've had things happen just because I felt hurt by someone, something bad happens to them.
Yeah.
That's, and I don't know what that is.
I mean, the thing about chaos magic especially is that it feels very much like a way of manipulating yourself psychologically to sort of get at the part of yourself that is inherent to you that can do these things. So I feel like once you start working on that, you might accidentally release it without meaning to here and there.
I mean, this has been happening to me since I was a little girl.
Okay. So that's interesting. So like, what was your, do you have like a, like, what's your earliest memory of something along, of noticing this sort of thing happening?
When I was in grammar school, well, before that, when I was younger, I got very ill. I got an immune disorder from fleas on a stray kitten. Then my mother was smart enough to take off the street for me and not take to the vet because apparently she wants to kill me.
Great.
So I was sick for years and I had to go to the hospital and I almost died. I spent my five-year-old birthday in the hospital in horrible pain, getting stuck full of needles and IVs. Then my mother realized basically I can't have salt because it attacked my kidneys. So basically my kidneys were not doing their job and I would just like blow up like a balloon and my cholesterol would go up. And anyway, so for years I couldn't eat salt. Like I just could not eat salt. And everybody in my school, I went to a pretty small school. Everybody knew that.
Mm-hmm.
And one day we had some kind of party and this girl brought popcorn that had salt in it. And now that I think about it, I wonder if I was just paranoid or my mother was just paranoid thinking that she meant that on purpose.
Yeah.
It was probably an honest mistake. But she also was mean to me in other ways. This girl was just like a bitch to me. Girls tend to be bitches to me. Anyway, I think it was about a week. It was either a week after that or a week after like the... There was one day that she was like my friend when we went on a field trip and then she was back to ignoring me or whatever. I don't remember what was the actual thing that happened, but then like a week after a strong emotion I had about her, she broke her arm.
Okay.
Trying to roller skate on her living room carpet. first time, and it was not the last, that a girl that was mean to me broke.
That's okay. Was it always the arm or was it often the arm? Like, is that sort of like,
no, it was another girl broke her leg. I think, I don't know. It was broken bones.
Okay.
Or public training.
Has anything like that happened like recently is like as an adult?
The last time it happened that I really like, I don't know. I'd have to think about that. I think a lot of times people who are shitty get bad karma that comes back at them.
Yeah.
It might not even have anything to do with me. I hope it doesn't. I hate to think that people are breaking bones on my account. But the last time it was really noticeable was this girl in college who was a bitch to me. We were in a theater class together. And she didn't want to like work with me at all. And it was just being really difficult. And she was like so full of herself, like, oh, I'm an actress, you know, whatever. And it's funny because the teacher of the class was her advisor. So they were like really tight.
Yeah.
And one day she wanted us to sing as an exercise, to go on stage and sing. And for anybody that can't sing, that's super embarrassing, like me and her, and but I did it because the teacher told me to do it. And she refused, and the teacher did not let up, and she ended up just sob singing on stage, just like being horribly embarrassed.
Yeah.
And it kind of felt like it was related to her being a bitch to me in theater class.
Right. Like you were sitting there, you're like, I did this somehow. This is me.
It felt connected. I don't know.
Okay. So these are like things that have happened involuntarily, but you mentioned, yeah, I think earlier that you've also
hurt and I see somebody like breaking a bone or somebody they love kills themselves or something, like something bad happens to them.
Okay. But you also mentioned that you were doing sort of voodoo dolls and things like that. So, like you were sort of intentionally trying to put, I mean, hex might be the wrong word, but it's like a common sort of catch-all term. But like there was a period of time where you were trying to do these things to other folks, and then you stopped, is the impression I have. Perhaps I'm...
Yeah, there's a couple people. Not many. The last person I did to was really a shithead, and he totally deserved it. And weirdly enough, like, I didn't know what would happen. I just wanted to get him, his influence away from me.
Yeah.
Because I felt he had, like, really, he was just, all his bad energy was just, I felt it all over me. Like, it was just messing me up. And so I did something involving, like, graveyard dirt and a doll made of wax. And it was, like, really thorough kind of thing I usually don't do. And I ended up hearing from another friend that he broke several bones soon after that.
Okay.
Which was not my intent. I just wanted to get him away from me.
Right.
It was a binding spell, I think, from what I recall.
Okay. Well, that just sort of goes into like what you said earlier about how like when you're doing magic, it is possible that you'll get the thing you want in the way you don't want it. But that's just part of, it's a learning process, all of this. I was wondering, you're clearly a writer, an accomplished writer with an Amazon page. Once again, well done. And you've written about experiences you've had, but do you ever use magic sort of behind the scenes as a writer to kind of affect the process that you're going through as a writer?
I try. I'm very inspired by Aleister Crowley, more actually for his writing than, I mean, I, everything, I think. I think just how he changed how people see magic.
Hmm.
Because he really came about it with a revolutionary spirit, and his writing is very captivating, and I'm very drawn to writing that is kind of puts you under a spell.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So that's kind of what I try to do. When I write, I go into various levels of trance. Self-induced trance. Like I'll have an album that I just listen to over and over again as I'm writing a certain story, and I bring myself into this weird heightened state, and I try really hard with my language and the energy of what is going on, colors, textures, to kind of get inside people's heads through synesthesia.
Interesting. Okay, so you're trying to initiate synesthesia in other people in that way. That's cool. Oh my god. Okay, sorry. I've stopped being a journalist for like 5 seconds just because I'm like really excited by that idea.
I was very inspired by I don't know if you've read Antoine Artaud's The Theater and Its Double.
I have not. Why don't
it's really fascinating. It's a book about theater theory.
Okay.
He was a surrealist artist. He hung out with the other surrealists. Turns out I think he was like schizophrenic or something, but he had some amazing ideas. And in The Theater and Its Double, for one thing, he has this long essay about how the Black Plague was a result of a psychic disease, which is really fascinating.
Cool.
Yeah. Then he talked about theater of cruelty, which is this new form of theater. And he thought the audience should be in the middle and the play should surround them. And you need to reach the audience through their subconscious, break through their conscious mind, and break through with sensory, a sensory assault, with sounds and sights and everything. And basically now the modern like rock concert does that, or music videos. Jim Morrison was very inspired by that. Tried to incorporate into their shows that ritual aspect. And I feel that way about art. You know, I think art needs to bypass, depends what kind of art you're doing, but if you're doing very arty art, you want to bypass the conscious brain so that you can get inside somebody and speak to their subconscious directly, because the conscious mind gets in the way. It will pass judgments. It'll be like, oh, well, that seems weird. I can't believe that. Like you skip the middleman and you just go right to the core.
Okay. That's really interesting, because it also sounds so much like when Peter J. Carroll, who wrote Liebernell, when he talks about part of what you're trying to do, unless I'm getting him mixed up with somebody else, but he'll like talk about the idea of like, you need to bypass the ego to get to the super ego, not the super ego. There's like an ultra, there's like beyond the ego as something else. Right. Wait, what?
Carl Jung is somebody else that has really helped me see things differently, because he had a much more, I feel, holistic vision of the self than Freud. Freud saw a self that is very much at war with itself. And it is an accurate vision as well.
Yeah.
But Jung, I think, shows you what you're trying to aspire to. And you're trying to aspire to cohesiveness. And he saw we all are connected. You know, this division is an illusion. You know, there is the collective unconscious. And there are certain symbols and colors and shapes that will speak to everybody in that same universal language. And I think of myself as an artist as trying to tap into those symbols so that I can speak to anyone.
Yeah. That's okay. That's really fascinating. So, and when you try to get access to that language, that sort of universal artistic way of communicating between minds, between subconsciouses, is it just the trance state that you go into, or like, are there other sort of techniques and methods? And feel free if you don't want to talk about it. Cause I don't want you to like give the shop away for everybody else for your process, or if you want to give it away and share with everybody, that would certainly be good for me and for them. But you know, hold on to what you want to.
I'm trying to think how I make art. I don't know. It's kind of hard to figure out how your own meat is made.
Yeah.
I will get obsessed with certain textures and shapes and ideas, and then I will try to figure out how to convey that with words. Like, I've always felt like words are kind of very clunky and ineffective for communication. I prefer visual art and music.
Mm.
But I'm not that good at music or painting. So words are all I have. So I try to do my best to take images I have and convey them verbally. But I don't know. I don't know how to answer that.
I mean, that's entirely fair. Also, I feel like I should, as a responsible host, mention that you're listening to RadioFreeBrooklyn.com or listening to Radio Free Brooklyn right now, and keep doing that. It's a good radio network. Okay, so before that was not a glowing endorsement at all. I apologize, everyone. It's a great network. They let me do this show. So
will this be like recorded and like I can like show links to it, or is it just people that are listening to it like right at that moment?
So it's both. So like people are listening to this right now. Well, one presumes that people are listening to it right now. I hope so. If you're listening right now, say hey on the internet. But like, yeah. And then like a week from now, this will be a podcast and I can throw that up and you can just send that.
Nice.
I'll send you a link and you can send that to everybody. And speaking of links, so if people want to check you out and check out your work, I mean, there's still more to talk about, but I want to make sure we get to promoting you and your good work. Where should people go if they want to check you out and your stuff?
I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Instagram, and the Clash website, yesclash.com, is online. There's always cool content that I try to get up there, movie reviews, satire pieces, trans book reviews, all kinds of stuff. And that's on Tumblr also, Tumblr and like .com. And my podcast, Get Lit with Lisa, is on Podbean, and you can also get it on iTunes. And I just talk to cool indie writers, and yeah.
Okay, awesome. And I'll throw up links to all these things when this becomes a podcast, so everybody can just click on them and go at their leisure and ease to them. So when we started talking about like things you might want to talk about for this interview, you mentioned being from Mexico, and I'm interested, like, has that had any effect on sort of your religious or spiritual practice? Because you mentioned like Catholicism really early on being a thing you kind of like didn't want to hang out with as hard, maybe, which is fair because Catholicism is it's a bit much.
Yeah, I mean, I was raised, my parents were agnostic, so I was not raised with any religion.
Okay.
But I was born on Christmas, which was strange there.
Yeah.
Because it's all about Jesus. It's all about Jesus. And you see Jesus, you see the nativity scene everywhere, and not having a context for it, I was even more confused. Like, who's this Jesus guy and why is he jacking my birthday?
Yeah.
Grand
theft birthday.
So I don't know. I think being in Mexico, I wasn't really like super submerged in the religion or the culture. I was just kind of living there because my mother was American and my parents kind of just only bred me British and American literature for some reason. Not that I'm complaining about that, but I do think I think Day of the Dead did affect me because it made me think a lot more about death in a different way. It made me think more about the renewal nature, the cyclical renewal nature of life, and how in life we're in death, and death leads to life, so I think I never saw death as this like sort of taboo topic. Like death was out in the open. Death was, Day of the Dead is a celebration of life, and it's a day to remember your dearly departed.
Yeah.
And make these beautiful sort of displays called ofrendas, where they like will set up like all the stuff that person loved. They do it for famous people as well as people in the family. So they're like, their favorite liquor will be there, their favorite cigars, like everything. And it's just very much a, so I think Day of the Dead and how morbid and melodramatic Mexican Catholicism is, I think those things definitely affected how I look at the world. Kind of like, if you look at Frida Kahlo paintings, like kind of that way of seeing things, where everything is just very on fire and very bloody. Like, that's how I see life.
Okay. That's fantastic. And so, I mean, we've talked a lot about like your journey thus far and like sort of your beginnings and your past, but like, do you have a sense of like a direction you want to go in with this practice? Or is it really like, because I mean, it sounds like you're also like maybe just like you sort of go to when you need it, but is there like anything you're curious to explore at the moment in terms of?
I would definitely like to get more into tantric sex and such. That would be, my partner's like slowly easing his mind open so that he can get there. So
okay. And what would, so with tantric sex, so I don't actually know a ton about it. I'm led to understand that you just sort of, you keep going without actually achieving climax for an extended period of time. But I feel like that's the very sort of like Froder's guide version of what we're talking about. Like, what is sort of the spiritual aspect of that interests you?
I think what I'm looking for is to be having sex with not just our bodies, to be having sex with our souls, and to be really awake to each other's energies and to be able to really consciously work with our chakras and get certain types of energies flowing and be able to channel certain archetypes just kind of get more into that mystical sex space where you're kind of in another level of existence. So I think what I'm really looking for is a deeper level of connection that is not just physical. I'm kind of over just a physical connection for the sake of having an orgasm.
Right. Okay. That sounds really cool. Like, where are you looking to like learn more about this? Like where, if someone wanted to sort of like follow in your footsteps and sort of learning about this, where would they go?
I'm not looking anywhere. I need him to be ready.
Oh, okay. Fine.
I need a willing body and a willing mind. If I was Signal, this would sound like a personals ad.
Okay, cool. Well, good luck. I hope he comes around soon. Cool. And actually, yeah, it's from the topic of where to go to learn things. So, I mean, so far you've talked about, I'm trying to remember now, you talked about the Satanic Bible. You read some Crowley. You're into Crowley. Yeah. Where else should people go if they're like, because like, once again, like we're talking all levels here. Like, so people who are new to magic and new to this whole thing, like where are good places for them to like learn the ropes, get involved, check it out, et cetera.
Everybody needs to read Carl Jung.
Okay.
Read as much Carl Jung as possible because he really knows his shit. The keys to everything is Carl Jung. Read Carl Jung.
Okay, cool. Glowing endorsement. Carl Jung, everybody.
Carl Jung.
read Carl Jung.
He's got the lowdown. You will start to understand your own mind. I would say I would recommend also reading about evolutionary biology, okay, because then you will understand yourself as a species and an animal and understand you are an animal. You are a mystical animal, but you're an animal. Once you understand your animalness and stop pretending you're better than animals, you will have a much easier time.
Okay, cool. That's fantastic. Okay, everybody. Animals, you're an animal. Carl Jung, evolutionary biology. Any good books on evolutionary biology? Because like, so a friend of mine was recommending Sex at Dawn a while back as a good one. Sex at Dawn. So it's this book of evolutionary biology specifically around human sexuality. So it's a lot of things like, why do some couples stop having sex after like 4 or 5 years? And it's like, well, maybe it's because there's an evolutionary impetus to have such a high like incest taboo in you that if you live with someone for long enough, you might start on a subconscious level understanding them as a member of your family, and therefore you will be less attracted to them because your mind starts thinking, oh, this is incestuous now, this is bad, which is interesting. I don't know if I buy it, but like, it's a thought. It makes sense. But like, that's what my friend said. I mean, where would you, I mean, do you have any like good, because I mean, evolutionary biology, it can seem dry. It can seem hard to sort of get into because there's a lot of statistics in it and stuff like that. Like, are there any good places that people might look?
I'm trying to remember this book I read. I'm trying to Google it right now. I'm not seeing it. It was like this massive tome. And it was really good.
Okay, so while you Google that, there's actually a copy in front of me that I'm supposed to read at some point during the show. So while you're Googling that, I'm going to read a thing and then jump back in. So, hey guys, if you're in the New York City area, there is, what am I supposed to tell you about? So there's START, which is a Treatment and Recovery Center's career fair, which is happening on Friday, June 16th from 3:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. And on Saturday, June 17th, that is a week from yesterday, at 10 a.m., from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., and this is happening at 937 Fulton Street in Brooklyn. And it's to advance your career. You can go there, or you can also check it out at startny.org. And this prepared copy that has been handed to me says, at START, they believe that the best way to treat people is the right way to treat people. They have committed themselves to being the organization that will support transformation for better futures. With clinics and adolescent care, their mission is to educate the community and leverage research for the betterment of those they serve. START is hiring for talented candidates such as nurse physicians, RNs, nurse practitioners, physician assistants, counselors, clinic directors, and there are great internship experiences and more at their Treatment Recovery Center's Career Fair on Friday the 16th and Saturday the 17th. There will also be light refreshments, and you get to meet light refreshments, and you get to meet their hiring managers. Dress to impress and bring a copy of your resume and all licenses and credentials you may have. Okay, cool. So that was that. Oh, you're gone. Oh, you're back. Okay, cool.
It's Sex, A Natural History.
Okay, perfect. Sex, A Natural History. So check that out. Who, do you know who wrote that?
I'll find it.
I mean, that's okay. You guys have Google.
Google it.
Yeah. And also I'll put a link up to that when this becomes a podcast.
But that, I don't know, for some reason that book, it wasn't boring. Joanne Ellison Rogers.
Awesome. Okay.
Joanne Ellison Rogers.
Okay, perfect.
Really good. It was, I don't know. I think it helped me also kind of deal with my issues with men.
Okay.
I think I'm feeling very angry at the male species when I read that.
I mean, men can be amazingly shitty. But I mean, you know, animals. We're all spiritual animals. So we're all on a path, hopefully, to getting better. Some of us to getting worse. And if you notice that happening, do you work on that? Okay. So lucid dreams. Do you still do those?
It's really hard. I don't really do them on purpose. They just happen when they happen. I have found that, if you keep a dream journal, you will remember your dreams more and become more lucid more frequently when you're dreaming, but it takes a lot of work. And also the more you meditate, the more you will have lucid, vivid dreams.
Okay, cool. So you've incorporated meditation to some extent, at least in the past, into your like spiritual practice. Like, how do you, because like that's another thing where I feel like a lot of people, they're like, you know, meditation, and they say the noun and no one really understands what they're like, yeah, I know what that is, basically. But then like when it comes to like trying to start, people have a lot of trouble. So like how'd you get into it? Like what is your process? Not with the understanding, of course, that like, you know, it's, you know, we're not, are you a meditation expert? You could be. You're not. Fine. Even then, though, you're someone who does it. And that's important because that's so much more than so many people. So meditation, how do you do it? How do you get started? Let's talk about it.
The main challenge with meditation is to quiet your mind. Obviously, that's the hardest thing. Once you've done that, you're pretty much already there. And I have found doing yoga is the best way to get into a meditative state. So like if you do like half an hour of yoga, for like a week, hopefully by the end of that week, you'll be able to get to a place mentally where you can just, be, and, like when thoughts come, you don't push them away. You just let them pass. So you can't be active. You have to be completely passive. I need to work on just doing meditation for meditation's sake. Because of my magical interests, when I do meditation, it's usually for a purpose of visualizing something, self-cleansing, getting my chakras rolling, stuff like that. Yeah. So I will focus on visual images. But it's a great way to cleanse your chakras. Is basically you need to you can have an object in front of you for each color of each chakra color. So red for the root chakra, then orange, then yellow, then green, blue, throat chakra, communication, and purple for the third eye, and then white, the crown. And so you kind of just sit there with your legs crossed, your back straight, and you visualize your root chakra. You visualize like a spinning red disc, and you visualize it spinning. And then once you feel it in your stomach, well, you're under your stomach, you bring it up to the next one and the next one. And a lot of times I'll get stuck on the heart chakra. So I guess I have a lot of issues there, a lot of pain and stuff. But the more you do that and the more you visualize it, the brighter the colors will get, and the cleaner it'll flow, and the quicker you'll be able to get it all the way up to the top. And then you'll feel amazing and really awake.
Okay. That seems like a really good sort of note to end on, because that feels very optimistic, and it makes me feel good about the future in a way that I don't usually, because I have a lot of problems with my heart. And I'm just a sad boy. But while I still have you, thank you again. Thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate you taking the time, and this has been a great conversation. But while I still have you on the Skype line, any last thing you want to like tell everybody now that you have, I mean, you have so many platforms, so I'm sure like you're not, I'm sure there's nothing that you're like just like aching to get out that you really need to, but like, you know, since you're here and it's a very particular forum with a very particular audience, like, is there anything you want to like, any last things you want to just like shout out at these witches and warlocks and wizards and such?
I mean, as far as like what I want people to look at of me, the podcast, because I talk to writers, and I don't really ask like typical writer questions. I mean, I'll ask some typical writer questions, but usually it goes in all kinds of different directions depending who I'm talking to. You know, I had a guest where we were just ranting about the patriarchy for almost 2 hours, and another one that I'm going to air Tuesday where it got like super emo, and we just complain about stuff. So it's just a really fun forum, the podcast forum. And I'm, you know, I'm on Facebook. That's usually where I'm the most present. I'm on Twitter, but I feel more at home on Facebook. So
that's awesome. Okay. And I will throw up links to all of these things. So when this becomes a podcast, which is the primary way people tend to listen to this anyway, they'll all be there. and it'll be great. Thank you so much for this. I really appreciate it. You have been fantastic. Oh my gosh. Hooray.
I wish I could have been there in person.
I mean, that's totally, I mean, you made this work and that's great. And like, yeah, come down to New York sometime. I'll buy you a drink or something. Cool.
Cool.
Awesome. Have a swell day.
All right. Cool.
Cool. How do I? Okay. And now I know. Okay. And then I turn off Skype. So big thanks to Leza Cantarell for speaking to me about her magical journey. And you should definitely check her out on Facebook and at yesclash.com, and also check out her podcast, which is Get Lit with Leza, which is at podbean.com and also on iTunes. And thank you so much for giving the show a listen this week. Be sure to check us out 2 weeks from now, and I'll be talking to a student of the occult practices of Thailand, and those get incredibly dark, but also fun. Like, tattoos are a big part of it, which I think is cool. Like, I just got my first occult tattoo, my first tattoo ever, but it's an occult one, this year, and I feel great about it. Just went to the beach today, and I was like, hey guys, I'm not wearing a shirt, and there's a tattoo, and it's from an alchemical manuscript from 1550 called The Rosary of the Philosophers, and it's part of becoming part of the process of becoming a divine hermaphrodite. So check that out on my body forever. Yeah, and you know, big thanks to Radio Free Brooklyn, which is what you're listening to right now. Check us out on iTunes. And also, if you have any questions for our research department, you should send those to intothedarkrfb@gmail.com. That's intothedarkrfb, R as in radio, F as in free, B as in Brooklyn, @gmail.com. And our research department will jump on that. We actually have, so there's a listener question I have been sitting on for about a fortnight. No, longer than that. I think possibly like 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks. And that's going to be coming up on the next episode. So next episode, Thai occult stuff. And then also something about a major physical structure in America and how it has been used or possibly could be used for magical purposes and the occult, which is super. I'm excited about it because I was like learning, and I think you're going to like these things too because they are creepy and they also make Missouri much more mystical than I ever thought it was, which is super cool. So thanks a bunch for listening into the dark. And what else is there to say? Exciting update. So, you know, last episode we talked about the a ritual. I talked with Michael M. Hughes about a ritual to bind Donald Trump. There was one at Catland Books, the witchcraft bookstore I work at, yesterday, and the turnout was massive and the magic seemed very palpable and strong. And we even kind of got ambushed by like a right-wing film crew. So it feels like, hey, guys, maybe if people who support Donald Trump are scared, maybe the magic is working. Though I should point out that Radio Free Brooklyn is itself a nonpartisan organization, has no political stance, and all political stances expressed on this or any other podcast are of those of the people speaking them and not of Radio Free Brooklyn or its subsidiaries or parent companies that exist, possibly. I don't know if they actually do. Good night.